John Kachuba is with me in the studio tonight. He has informed and entertained us before with his books about ghost hunting, and he's here to do more of the same with his book titled Shapeshifters, A History. John, I'm delighted to welcome you back.
Thank you, Barbara. It's great to be back again.
So I would guess when many of us hear the word shapeshifter, we think of werewolves or we think of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, but you've taken the historic view of this and gone much broader and deeper. So let's start with history. How far back does it go? What kinds of images were conjured up?
You're exactly right. When we think of shapeshifters, we do think of those stereotypes, right? The vampire and the werewolves especially. But as I was doing research, I found that the character, a shapeshifter character, goes back thousands and thousands of years, and it seems to be prevalent in almost every culture around the world. I found some of the earliest signs go back to Neolithic times, in a cave in France, where there's a line drawing painted on the walls of this cave. It's actually in my book, you can see the illustration, but it's clearly, I'll call it a deer man, because it is standing on its two legs, two hind legs. If you look at it, it has toes instead of hoofs, and antlers with a face that has a remarkable resemblance to a human. And the four arms of the animal are, again, more humanoid than animal, and they seem to have fingers. So what that indicates is a transformation of a man into a deer. And this goes back probably to ancient shamanic rituals, you know, hunter rituals, where a shaman would go into some ritual dance or trance with the hunters, sometimes aided by hallucinogenic materials from the environment, mushrooms or things like that, to put them in that state. But they would become the deer. They would take on that persona of the deer. So they would take on the deer's cunning, the deer's speed, the deer's agility, whatever. So they can actually merge with the deer and be able to prey on the deer. So it goes way back. And there's a little bit more recent, maybe like 12th century, but the berserkers, you know, from where we get our word berserk.
Yes.
These were Icelandic warriors who, again, like the ancient shaman hunters, would take on the persona of either bears, primarily bears or wolves. The archaeological evidence suggests that they actually ingested mushrooms. So they put themselves in a frenzied state, but they would wear the pelts and the hide and the head of the animal, and they would go into battle with that idea of being a bear or being a wolf, and also being aided by drugs, of course. But they found that in battle, these warriors were invincible. You could not stop them. They were in a frenzy. You think of the word berserk, when we talk about somebody going berserk, that's exactly where it comes from, the berserkers. So it got so bad that after about a century of these berserk bands fighting, the various kings of the Scandinavian countries then got together and outlawed them, because you couldn't even rely on them as your own troops, because they would turn on anybody. So if you were allied with them and you're in battle, you kept a good distance, because when they started swinging their axes and their swords, it didn't matter who you were. Everything went down before them. So again, shape-shifting, did they actually physically change? Did we see them suddenly grow hair and sprout claws and fangs? No. But for all practical purposes, they were bears. They were wolves. And as long as they were in that state, they were animals.
Well, let's come up to modern times, because this was a fascinating aspect of your book, that it is so expansive. So talk about things like the Twilight series and Transformers. And you said before we went on the air that this book kind of got away from you because it became so broad.
Well, the whole shapeshifter character, I think, first of all, it speaks to something in all of us. We recognize the fact that we're animals, or we should recognize that fact, because we are. We're higher animals, but we're still animals. And as such, we have an animal nature. The only thing that keeps that animal nature in check is our laws, our religious codes, our moral codes. But once you take all that down, there's nothing. You can become an animal again. And if you think of some of the horrible things that humans have done to each other over generations, we know we're capable of animal behavior. So I think there's something in that character that speaks to sort of a desire to walk on the wild side. If you think of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that was exactly what Dr. Jekyll was trying to do. He was a well-respected doctor, but he wanted to dabble in the dark side of human nature. And that potion allowed him to do that. It got away with him and eventually killed him. But I think there's some attractiveness to that, to the idea of I can throw off all bonds and do whatever I want. It doesn't have to be evil, but I can just do whatever I want. I could run naked through the woods and howl at the moon if I want to, right? So there's some fascination with that. So I think that transcends even to modern day. I think we still all have that desire. And even if you don't want to push it that far, I think most of us sometime in our life have had some desire, boy, if I was only stronger, if I was only taller, if I was more handsome, more beautiful, if I could, you know, whatever, some fault that we see in ourselves. And so having the fantasy of a shapeshifter allows you to sort of break out to that. Think of Halloween. Why do we all get dressed up in costumes for Halloween? And right now there's a huge industry called cosplay, which is short for costume play. And this is a $1 billion industry worldwide, where people dress up as characters from Marvel comic books, from cartoons on TV, from Twilight, and they go to these conferences where there's thousands of them. And I've been to some of these as part of my research. And I'm walking around among gremlins and dwarves and green giants and people with wings and three heads. And I don't even know who half of them are supposed to be. But they're all in that mode. And it's not just dressing up. They'll speak like the character. They'll behave like the character. If the character is a vegetarian, that one is not going to eat a hamburger. So, I mean, it's just, it's amazing how that happens. So it's in popular culture, but it's not just a fantasy, because there are still people today that believe in the reality of shapeshifters, that people can actually physically change. You know, the definition of a shapeshifter is a person who can shift, transform entirely into any kind of animal, another person, or even an inanimate object, and sometimes back and forth, actually usually back and forth. Sometimes the transformation is permanent, but more often it's shape-shifting back and forth. So we have that, and it's a very common phenomena that cultures that actually believe this is still going on. And I'm not just talking about what we might call, I hate to use the word, but primitive or more indigenous cultures. I'm talking about people who are educated and sophisticated and articulate who say, yes, shapeshifters walk among us still. So they're still here in all forms.
So does that pick up on the idea of aliens also?
Very much so. There's a man out of England named David Icke's who has a theory that millions of years ago, he calls them reptilian aliens. So they have some kind of a reptilian form. Think of like a lizard man, okay? That millions of years ago, they came to our planet from some star system. He'll name it. He has all the exact details of what planet, what star system, and I don't remember this. It's in my book, the details. But he talks about them coming to Earth millions of years ago and mating with the proto-human humanoids, whatever it was on the planet at that time, Neanderthal or, you know, whatever. And that by doing that, creating a genetic strain that has this reptilian alien characteristic to it, so that today their descendants are able to shapeshift into reptiles, and that they have an underground civilization someplace, and it's a massive plot to basically overtake the world. He says some of the reptilian alien shapeshifters are Queen Elizabeth, Barack Obama was one, and he names, you know, country western stars, famous athletes. But the idea here is David Icke claims that he has 20 million followers that follow his newsletters, and believe this, 20 million, and I find it a little bit of a stretch to buy into his,
yes.
I don't want to call it a theory, because usually a theory has some fact behind it, you know, whatever his philosophy is. But again, it's today and people believe it.
There's a wonderful adage or story in your book, and it's one of my favorites, and it certainly sums up what we've been talking about, but it's just wise words in general. So read that for us, if you would, please.
Sure. This is from the chapter called The Werewolf, and it begins like this. An old Cherokee man was teaching his grandson about life. As the embers from their campfire floated up into the night sky, the old man said, "Grandson, there is a fight going on inside me. It is a terrible fight between two wolves. One wolf is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, resentment, and regret. He is greed, arrogance, self-pity, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, and kindness. He is empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. This same fight is going on inside you and in every other person, too." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked, "Which wolf will win?" The old man simply replied, "The one you feed."
Such good food for thought. Thanks so much for talking with us about shapeshifters.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I've been talking with John Kachuba about his latest book. It is titled Shapeshifters, A History. You'll find more information about it at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.